Welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast series by Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm Giuseppe Porcaro.
I'm Alicia Garcia Herrero.
And today we will talk about China's influence in the Balkans. This episode is part of Bruegel's focus on global China as seen from Europe, which includes our monthly newsletter Zhonghua Mundus, to which we invite you to subscribe. The link is in the show notes. I'm happy to host Mira Milosevic, who is senior analyst and expert in the Balkans, Russia and Eurasia at the Elcano Royal Institute in Spain. Hi Mira, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine. Thank you very much for inviting me to have me here.
Thanks to you for joining us. Going to the topic, China's emergence as a power in the Western Balkans over the last decade is among the most significant geopolitical developments in Europe. As an element of Beijing's wide internationalization effort to expand its global footprint, the country has been working to improve its position in several key sectors, from energy and infrastructure to culture, education, and media. This has caught many politicians by surprise, while others have preferred to dismiss the importance of the trend due to a scarcity of reliable and accessible data points and information. A lot of the investments are linked to the Belt and Road Initiative. Occasionally, this has surfaced into the news, such as the unfinished motorway project in Montenegro, also dubbed as the Highway to Hell, or the most expensive motorway in the world. Mira, can you help us navigate around the landscape of Chinese investments in the Balkans and their strategic importance?
I think that China emerged as a power in the Western Balkans for four main reasons. The first one is the global economic crisis in 2008. The second one is the increasing disinterest of the European Union in the Balkans because of the enlargement fatigue. The third one is the interest of the local governments of the six Western Balkan countries, Albania, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Kosovo, Montenegro, North Macedonia, and Serbia, in receiving Chinese investments. And fourth, I think that is very important to highlight also the Chinese approach to investment in the region, which is characterized by inclusivity and attention to local conditions. It means that Beijing is happy to give to local government what they want, without distinctions between authoritarian and democratic governments, in contrast, for example, with Western financial institutions and governments, with the European Union. So global economic crisis increased the need for external support, which coincided with the crisis of credibility of the European Union model and enlargement fatigue. And as you say, Giuseppe, the economic framework for this investment of China is the Belt and Road Initiative, but also 17+1, China Central Eastern European Cooperation Forum. So what the European Union see in Balkans as a backyard, China see an opportunity. And just to put on the table some numbers, between 2009 and 2021, China invested 32 billion of euros in the region. In Serbia alone, Chinese investment reached more than 10 billion. China is involved in 136 major projects and in all kinds of sectors. And Serbia is a paradigm of this very good cooperation because China is investing in 61 projects in Serbia. You mentioned also Montenegro and the highway to hell, which is the railway from Bar to Boljaris, is in this sense. Montenegro is a paradigm of the country in the debt trap diplomacy of China. Serbia is a paradigm of the country with a very high disposition to cooperate with China. But what is obvious is that all countries of the Western Balkans are entering in a trap of economic dependence, but also political, because China, to invest its money, pressures local governments to comply with its conditions that can be described as lack of transparency, corruption, labor exploitation, and environmental damage, and so on. So China improved in some way economic situation of these countries, but also Beijing stretching its position in the region in political, economic, and geopolitical way. Also, China intensified its cooperation in the cultural area through the Confucius Institutes, and also investing money in a lot of media, in radio, newspaper, and so on. Definitely this Chinese economic investment serves Chinese strategic and political interest in the region and inside of the framework of the Belt and Road Initiative.
Before I give the floor to Alicia for some comments, I would like just a clarification point. You mentioned that Montenegro is the example of the debt trap, and Serbia is the example of the, let's say, the
cooperation.
Yeah. Can you elaborate a bit more on these different kind of interventions in the countries? Because it's clear from what you say that they come with a lot of money, most of the case with Belt and Road initiative once, but not only. But it's not clear where the difference stands. I mean, how then a country can get into a debt trap if this money is not linked or tied to conditionalities and so on, which is a bit the attractiveness at first glance of those interventions from a local perspective, as you were just saying. So to understand a bit the difference in between these kind of disbursements.
Yeah. I said that China is investing in 61 projects in Serbia, and in Montenegro, for example, is only 9 projects. But even in this case, Montenegro is a paradigm of the debt-trapped diplomacy of China, because the project, one of these 9, the biggest one, is a project of the railway highway between Bar and Boljari. It's only 170 kilometers. The first part of this project is finished after 7 years, and nobody knows exactly how much money China and Montenegro spent in this project. For now, some numbers said that we are talking about the 1 billion of euros. It is very difficult to know exactly because there is not transparent project, and free government in Montenegro has changed during these 7 years. The first part of this project, only 41 kilometers, is finished between Smokvice and Kolašina. It's 41 kilometers. And now the depth of the Montenegro is 103% of their GDP. I mean, only a debt for this project, only one project.
For 41 kilometers of motorway.
Yeah, for 41 kilometers. The China Road and Bridge Corporation is the main company which accepted to finish this job. But the conditions are not transparent, but for example, what is clear is that in any problem in the fulfillment of the contract, China will not respect any decision of tribunals or laws in Montenegro, but only Chinese laws and Chinese tribunals and the rules of their companies. The second part of this project, which now the Montenegro said that the cost will be 273 millions of euros, Montenegro is trying to attract the European Union investment, but the European Union said that the European Union will not pay not debt of Montenegro for this project, and that will not want to participate in a project of where China has a very high investment. So the paradigm of the debt trapped diplomacy of debt trapped of Montenegro is this fact that 103% of the GDP of Montenegro is already the debt for 41 kilometers of the highway between Bar and Boljar. This is an example of the debt trap. The second example is what I called the example of the high cooperation and disposition of all kind of cooperation. And I said that Serbia is this example. Serbia is a central piece of Chinese presence in the region for its geography as a transport hub, but also politically. By the end of the 2021, Chinese investment in Serbia is more than 10 billions, will be 10 billions of euros. Of this amount, infrastructure investment and loans are for 8 billions of euros. Also, I think that is, I did not mention, but it's very important to say that of this, I said that 32 billions of euros is investment of China in the region, but only around of 3 billions of euros is the direct investment. The rest of this money are loans. In the case of Serbia, of this almost 10 billions, 8 billions are loans for projects of infrastructure and energetic projects, also exploitation of mines, of gold, for example, in the mine of Bor, and so on. So here we have clear the government of the Aleksandar Vučić, which for different reasons, of course for economic reasons, but also because of the political reasons, and here I mean on the support of the China as well as of Russia in the Security Council of the United Nations and the Chinese vote against of the independence of Kosovo. If you remember, when NATO has been bombing Serbia in 1999, also one of the collateral damage was Chinese embassy in Belgrade, and Beijing really has not forgotten it.
We will get back to this geopolitical aspect in a second, Mira.
Second part, but when I talk about the cooperation of Serbian government, I'm thinking about the excellent relationship between the government of Aleksandar Vučić and Xi Jinping and the political elite of China. I understand that we will talk also about coronavirus and Chinese help. I will not enter, but what I think here, what is important is that not only China is investing in economic projects, but also in the cultural projects, in the sinology programs, cultural center in Belgrade, in different interchanges between students, professors, journalists, and also and this is, I think, one of the most important things, when I talk about the strategic cooperation between China and Russia, is that China sold HQ-22. This is the kind of intermedium missiles, very similar to S-300s of Russia. Here we have seen the shift in Serbian government in buying armament from China, not only for Russia. And also the Chinese government sold CH-92A drones to Serbian government. What I want to say that we have economic cooperation, political cooperation, and strategic cooperation in military terms. And this is completely new for Serbian society and Serbian foreign policy. In this sense, is a kind of revolution in Serbia in its cooperation with China.
Thank you. And Alicia, here at Zongua Mundus, we have already explored the impact of the Belt and Road Initiative, both on China's foreign policy. So some of the things that Mira just said are linking up with what we already have been saying from another point of view. But also we've been exploring the impact of all these kind of things in specific countries. For example, we had an episode on Sri Lanka, which our listeners can find in the show notes. So what's your first reaction from this broader perspective to the situation that Mira has just been describing?
Thank you, Giuseppe. Well, first of all, thank you, Mira, for this overwhelming, really, set of facts about how much Serbia is already entangled with China. I like the fact that you still, you know, put, of course, Serbia more as a cooperation as opposed to debt diplomacy, as Giuseppe mentioned, Kosovo. I was just calculating as you spoke the figures. Actually, is again about 9.7 billion in loans. There's a lot of FDI, like Huawei greenfield FDI. Huawei has one of the most important research centers in Belgrade rather than elsewhere. Yeah, and for a reason. So there's FDI, there's loans, but they are 10% of GDP, so they're not, you know, it's not Kosovo or it's not certainly a dependence in that sense. And I think there is a lot of historical reasons why this is the case, which in a way mimic, and we can get back to these, Serbia's relations with Russia. And in a way now, as you were saying, even on the military front, kind of doubling down with a game of two major, you know, forces, yeah. But you know, I was just to remind the audience, yeah, Serbia applied, basically became an accession country of the EU sometime in, if Wikipedia is not wrong, something like 22nd December 2009. I just want to put that into the context of what we're discussing here. Yeah, I mean, isn't this something needs to give, you know, like, can Serbia, or it's not about Serbia, it's about us, because at the end of the day, Serbia plays its cards, rightly so, or the Serbian government, because we also, you know, hear of protests, for example, in Serbia about data requirements, basically data extraction. This is in the context of Huawei. And, you know, privacy requirements perhaps not being fully implemented. What I'm saying is that not everybody probably agrees, yeah, with the government's view of what China can give as opposed to the EU. But it seems to me that the government has made up its mind or has not made up its mind. I mean, I want to understand where we are in the Western Balkans as regards these questioners. Do they need to choose between the EU, Russia, China? Do they feel they don't need to choose? Bringing the Ukraine situation, yeah, and how it all evolved. And are we there or are we not there? I mean, what, you know what I mean, in terms of this risk, yeah, that you may have some part of the, if not the Western Balkans, probably even the Western Balkans, kind of jumping, yeah, on the EU train because they see the risk of that diplomacy, you name it, and maybe not Serbia. I mean, I'd like to understand how these two forces, the EU with this accession, or is it just already forgotten? And I would argue that because of what happens with Croatia, maybe not, yeah, because somebody made it, yeah, or you have a different view. I just, because it all sounds like, okay, it's a free lunch. Yeah, the EU doesn't care or doesn't seem to care, but maybe it does care, especially after Ukraine. So the question is that potential cost of say, no accession or no completion of accession there? Is it irrelevant for Serbia or is it relevant for anybody else, but not Serbia? I mean, that's my question. Sorry for the long one.
No, I understand. And here, I think that it's impossible to talk about China and Russia in the Balkans without talking about the West and the European Union. The problem of Serbia is, and particularly of the Aleksandar Vučić, its president, is that Vučić would like to be Tito, you know, would like to be our communist boss during the Cold War. Why? Because during the Cold War, Yugoslavia was a country alienated country. Current Serbia and Vučić still think that in some way can be in this kind of politics between the West and the East. And he's trying to imitate Tito, actually. Even the people does not remember this kind of politics. This is the first point. The second one is that Serbians...
Let me chip in, Emira, just to say that the way actually is described in the media that I was reading to prepare is neo-Titoism, which I thought, wow.
It's neo-Titoism. It's neo-Titoism.
So it's even coined.
It's new Titoism. I didn't see it in newspaper, but I was born during during communism and Titoism. So I was pioneer of Tito, and I know how it is. We have been a good friends of everybody. We don't want to be enemy to anybody, and so on. The second point is also I think from my point of view, the wrong conviction, but the Vučić conviction that Serbia does not have to choose between Moscow or Beijing, the European Union, United States, between the East and the West. Because what Vučić is trying to do is to use Russia and China to balance pressure from Brussels and Washington. In this sense, China is much more useful for Belgrade because of the economic support, but also Russia because our cultural, historical, and religious links. So Serbians, above all the young people, are very conscious that we cannot continue to try to be friends of everybody. Friends, I mean, in sense, in very superficial connotation. But during this government, and I think that Vučić will be at least next 4 years, Serbia will try to maintain this ambiguity. Even with the war in Ukraine, even it sounds impossible, they will try to do it because this is a new Titoism. Even the world is completely changed.
Mira, if I may interrupt you on this, you're saying that they're trying to be friends with everyone, but to a certain extent, we are also seeing a regression of the relations, or like a deterioration of the relations that there used to be with Russia before. So, of course, there is definitely a dynamic between the different players in the regions, and that's, we should zoom in a bit more on those. And when it comes to Russia specifically, I think that until a certain point, until before China entered into force into this multiple dimension cooperation with Serbia, Russia was having a free range over there in the region, especially in the countries which are linked with the Orthodox culture and so on, as you were mentioning. So don't you see that there is perhaps something a little bit more complicated which is happening beyond the surface of this Titoism, especially when it comes to the relations and maybe the competition between Russia and China?
First of all, I would like to highlight that the perception of government and this desire to continue with Titoism is one thing, and it's true that more than half of population in Serbia supported these policies, but also there is a young generation in Serbia which really perceived both countries, Russia and China, in some way as fake countries. China for its copies of clothing and luxury goods, and Russia because of disinformation. And many young people say they are fake countries. But the policy of the government is another one. First of all, as you said, China and Russia are in the context of great power competition, and they are more rivalry power than cooperative power. And even from the West, now is in the West is very fashionable to talk about the alliance between Russia and China, because they have a common enemy, the United States, the West, and so on. But in the Balkans, their cooperation is without any substance. They are together there, but they are not allies. And I think that they have a kind of non-aggression pact. Both countries try to introduce their own policies and their own interests. And the biggest competition between them is in the economic field, especially in investments, in which China is winning, clearly. But Moscow also is counting on Russia's huge energy dependence on the countries of the region. The main instruments of influence for Russia is energy, but also these historical links, religion, culture, even literature, all kind of cultural cooperation. China, in some way, is exotic power for the Balkans. I remember when I was a child, when my parents invite us to have a lunch in Chinese restaurant, that was like a very special event for our family, because the food was very, very exotic. Russian food and Russian culture are not exotic, not at all. No, what is common for the both countries in the Balkans is their coordination regarding the veto in the UN Security Council on the recognition of Kosovo and some other diplomatic initiatives. And, of course, on the question of soft power, their strategies are the same with respect to the mask and vaccine diplomacy. Even China had much more success in it during the pandemic. But Russia still is perceived as a sister nation, sister power, especially for Serbia, because of this historical, religious, and linguistic and cultural ties that I have mentioned.
So you don't see in any near future or in the medium term a clash. Like, you see this non-aggression between Russia and China interests in the region as kind of working? Or do you see that at some point there is going to be a clash between Russia and China over there?
There, in my point of view, in short term, they there will not be a clash, because one of the rules of relationship in all parts of the world between China and Russia is we are not always together, but we are not we are never not against each other, and in all parts of the world.
And, but what about the medium term? Because this can be interesting also for a reflection more globally, you know, like.
Yeah, but in the Balkans, I think that Russia accepted that China is, in economic terms, much more power than Russia. But Russia is playing on the card of energy and historical and cultural links. And Serbia needs both of them for its objective to of non-recognizing Kosovo as an independent state in the United Nations. So I think that that there will not be clash soon. Maybe in future, if Serbia completely change its foreign policy and shift only to have a strategic relationship with China. But the truth also is that the Balkan countries need much more China than China needs them. In case of Russia, it's different, because Russia needs the Balkans because it's traditional zones of influence for Russia. And Russia is, how Russia does not have money there, Russia use energy and also is a kind of virtual power. I mean, Russia tried to highlight historical links and also Russia invests a lot of money in the local media of newspapers, radio, because of the campaigns of disinformation. So there are different interests, and above all, I think that Russia accepted that China is a much stronger player in economic terms.
Alicia, this thing that Russia somehow accepts that China is a much stronger player, zooming out of the Balkans and having a broader reflection, does it tell us something, this story of the Balkans, for the future relations of Russia-China?
Yeah, I was thinking by listening to Mira that this is not unique to the Balkans. Just that in the Balkans, I think there's three actors, the EU, of course, China and Russia, and say in Central Asia, and we saw this very clearly with Xi Jinping's visit to Kazakhstan, there used to be Russia and China was, you know, kind of in the making. And now, because of the dire situation, in my humble opinion, that Russia finds itself with this war, China is eating up Russia's cake in Central Asia. So, you know, I'm just saying, no matter the historical food, cuisine, religious linkages, if I were Putin, because, you know, it's hard to talk about Russia now other than Putin, I would watch out. You know, kind of endless collaboration ends the minute it starts. And I think that's what I can draw as a conclusion from the visit to Kazakhstan.
And I think this is very important to make these connections about our conversations with the Balkans and what's happening all around. I think this is crucial for this conversation. But because we are running out of time, of course, this is a very interesting topic, but we cannot conclude this episode without speaking a little bit more about the third actor, which has been floating around since the beginning, which is, of course, the European Union. what it seems. I mean, we've said that there's been an effort of European integration. We had Slovenia, Bulgaria, and Romania, and Croatia joining the European Union, but still this further expansion of the enlargement seems to have stopped. But not only seems to have stopped, seems that that Brussels has done very little even to stop the progress of China and Russia and Turkey. I mean, we haven't spoke about Turkey that much, and I just want to drop it over there without going too much into details. Otherwise, this is another episode of The Sound of Economics. But basically, it looks like there hasn't been many efforts from the EU side to cultivate closer ties with the Balkan countries. So leaving it a little bit as a free ride for China in that backyard, as Mira has been calling it before.
Yeah, as I said, the European Union see the Balkans as a backyard, and China sees it as an opportunity. But also, I think that it's very, very important to say what is true, that the European Union remains the leading economic partner with 70% of total foreign direct investments and 81% of exports what I want to say that there is a very good economic relationship between the European Union and the Balkans. The problem here is the problem of perceptions. For example, during pandemic, the public pool in Serbia indicated that citizens of Serbia see Russia and China as the country's best friends, while more than half do not support Serbia's European Union membership soon. Only 3% of people in Serbia recognize the fact that the European Union is Serbia's biggest economic partner. Only 3%, even the European Union invest much more money than China or Russia in Serbia and the Balkans. So the problem also is a problem of perception, and the problem is that, you know, every month in Serbia or in Bosnia, in Montenegro also, in all countries of the region, some politicians from China or Russia came to Serbia, came to visit the region. From the Brussels, these visits are very few. No, they are not so frequent. And always, when Brussels talk about Balkans, always highlighted the negative characteristics of Balkans: corruption, populism, lack of transparency, and so on. Always, the Brussels always talk about criteria. The Brussels always talk about criteria for entrance in the European Union, about the negotiations, about more or less, it's always a kind of blaming and explaining. China and Russia just do not do that. I mean, they always try to have a relationship among partners, and they try to not to impose anything, but to see and to hear what the local governments need, and then they try to fulfill it. And this is, I think, one of the reasons of this perceptions why the China and Russia has much better advertising in the region. The second one, and regarding directly the European Union, is also that when the government of Slobodan Milosevic changed in 2001, and when Kosovo has been recognized in 2008, Brussels, the political elite of the European Union, said to Serbia, you will never can enter in the European Union before you not solved your problem of territorial integrity, which it means Kosovo. Any country which not control completely territorial integrity cannot be member of the European Union. And after it, this year, the European Union gave express in very short time, in express sense, a status of candidate to Ukraine and to Moldavia. Both countries have a problem of territorial integrity. So this kind of the double criteria,
without mentioning Cyprus situation.
Without mentioning Cyprus, for example. So what I want to say is that the links between the Balkan region with China and Russia is much more the consequence that this region just passed from communist repression to the depression. Depression because they are not became candidates to the European Union, or because this negotiation for entrance in the European Union are so slowly. So in this context, China and Russia is a kind of help which this region needs because of this economic support. What the European Union has to do is to try to fulfill the vacuum that the Europeans had left during the financial and economic crisis in 2008. The European Union has to back to the Balkans in all political, economic, and strategic terms. If the European Union would like to be geopolitical power and geopolitical player, definitely the Balkan region has to be included in the European Union. And this is the question of credibility also of the European Union. I know that is a very difficult, but the battle, the European Union cannot give up in this issue.
Alicia.
Yes, very quickly. I know we're out of time, but I cannot resist Mira just making this comment. And of course, I don't know the Balkans as you do. You've been born there. So what I'm going to say is very daring, but still, I think necessary. It sounds like, we only put up front the problems and China offers the solutions. But as you rightly pointed out, there's a big difference. You're never going to be part of China. We're talking about different things here. At most, you're going to get debt from China. Maybe some investment if you're lucky. You're Serbia, certainly not the rest. You're going to get loans, which you need to repay. And from the EU, maybe with the wrong style and the wrong bureaucrats, you name it, but it's about accession. So it's just not the same ballgame. And by the way, it's also about the citizens of the West Balkans voting, those who are going to bring them either one way or the other. I just don't think it's only about the EU. I'm sorry to say this, but it's about those citizens with voting power. So far, let's see what happens. They should rush to probably rethink this, realizing what's at stake. It's very different to be a member of the EU as opposed to receiving loans from China. This is not comparable. And, I have a big problem with making it comparable, because I think that the whole point here is that the EU doesn't make this comparison loud and clear. It's the same in many, many other, geographies, but actually the balance is not as favorable for the EU, because Ukraine wasn't even an accession country. You know what I mean? Largely not as close or not as early as the Balkans, and let alone say if we talk about Africa or Central Asia. In a way, what really surprises me about the Western Balkans is that they don't see the balance, you know, of what it could be based on what has happened with Slovenia, with Croatia. I just can't. So maybe I'm underestimating the cultural reasons, but this is not about bureaucrats coming to tell Western Balkans what to do. It must be because they already went to Slovenia to tell them what to do. You know, there must be something here beyond, you know, it must be the culture. But then, as you said, China is too exotic to explain it with the culture. So what is it? Is it politicians that prefer that rather than do the homework? Is that what is happening?
I think
otherwise
that,
I just can't understand it.
I think that I completely agree with you. I think that the huge responsibility is in the politicians because of the this desire of continuity of Titoism. And because in short term, they would like to improve economic conditions of the population. And definitely, the European Union really has to explain all advantages to be in democratic and transparent and rule of law, the country which respect rule of law and all these kind of values, democratic values, than to receive loans of China. That is really true. But the reforms and to fulfill the criteria to be a member state of the European Union completely depends on the citizens of the Balkan states. But also the European Union just has to do more pedagogy in sense to explain what are really advantages to be a democratic country.
But if I might jump in, really also as a last comment, maybe I open a Pandora box here, but in any case, it seems that we all agree the EU needs to make some self-critique over there. It's not just about explaining with the nicer communication campaign or a brochure about what is the advantage of being EU citizens. I think that the Serbian people had understood very well and wanted to be Serbian citizens, but they've seen a very difficult climbing mountain. And this climbing mountain has become even more difficult the more the EU has been disengaging from a debate over enlargement. We shouldn't forget that this, you know, it's linked to the fact that any kind of discussion about enlargement has been, you know, now it's back into the discussion because of the war in Ukraine. But for many years, we've been completely freezing all this in the capitals. This has been very difficult to sell as something that was important and strategic. So there is a quite big responsibility as well to be given to the part of the EU and the strategy of the EU in the Western Balkans itself. So I think that here we can understand the reasons of everyone, and that's what we were trying to explain in this podcast. We can also understand the reasons of the politicians, as you said, Mira. I mean, like, they have short-term goals and they want to see some immediate gains, but also there is difficulty on perceiving the EU to have a clear strategy in order to integrate this region, at least until now. But probably this is going to change with the situation we are having now with the war. I don't know if you just want to say one sentence to react to this, or if we all agree on that.
I completely agree, and I know that the Western Balkans cannot be a part of China, so of China or Russia. They don't have to go to any another part of the world than to the European Union. So I hope that they will finally arrive one day there.
Alicia?
Everything has been said, and we have no time. It's been wonderful. I've learned so much. Thank you, Mira.
Thank you.
So thank you. Thank you so much. And of course, we could discuss for way longer, but this is all the time we have. I just want to remind everyone that this episode was part of Bruegel's focus on global China as seen from Europe, which includes as well our monthly newsletter Zhonghua Mundus, to which we invite you to subscribe. The link is in the show notes. As usual, you can read in open access all the analysis by our scholars on our website, www.bruegel.org. Mira, Alicia, thanks a lot for joining this conversation, and thanks to our listeners for following us. Until next time, bye-bye.